On Saturday, May 8th, 2004, in Arlington, Texas, the Detroit Tigers met the Texas Rangers in a game the Rangers would win in the 10th inning by a score of 16-15. The 5th inning started with an 8-pitch walk, followed by a 7-pitch walk, then a 5-pitch walk. By the time the top of the inning was over, the Tigers had faced 54 pitches and recorded 8 runs. Being the home team, the Rangers did not want to be outdone. They faced 56 pitches and knocked in 10 runs. The entire inning saw 110 pitches, 18 runs, and lasted 1 hour and 8 minutes, the longest inning in Major League history.
Bereshis bara Elohim, eis hashamayim ve'eis ha'aretz, ve'ha'aretz, ha'isa sohu vavohu, ve'choshech al p'nei sahom, ve'ruach Elohim mirachefes al p'nei hamayim, v'yomer Elohim yehi or, v'yehi or, Vayar Elohim es ha'or ki tov, vayavdel Elohim bein ha'or uvein ha'choshech, vayikra Elohim la'or yom, vilachoshech kora loyla, vayihi erev, vayihi voker, yom echad. In the beginning of God's creating the heavens and the earth, when the earth was astonishingly empty, with darkness upon the surface of the deep, and the divine presence hovered upon the surface of the waters, God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God said that the light was good, and God separated between the light and the darkness. God called to the light day, and to the darkness he called night. And there was evening, and there was morning, one day.
OU Israel presents...
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Shabbat Bereshit. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 25th day of Tishrei 5776, corresponding to October 8th. Let's first take care of the opening. Instead of a song, I was looking on the internet for some kind of broadcast of the record-setting inning in baseball. I did not find it. Instead, I found an article, a blurb on it, and I could not get it out of my head. I know it's an old joke, and I know that it is a corny joke, and it is a pun, which I think by definition are corny jokes, if you could call them that. But somehow, I could not resist. Because those 18 runs that were scored back in that one inning of the game were all scored, ready, in the big inning. Old line about Bereshit and baseball. Excuse me, so there you have it. And I really apologize, but not really. Could not resist. Too bad we didn't have the last out of the inning on recording. That would be fun. Psalm 121, since we don't say Tachanun for the balance of the month of Tishrei. Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph. Shir Lama Alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, Me Ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me Im Adonai, Ose Shamayim Vaoretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum Velo Yishan, Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomrecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh Lo Yakeka, Veyoreach Balaila. Adonai Yishmorcha Mikol Ra Yishmoret Nafshecha. Adonai Yishmoret Seisecha Uvoecha Me'ata V'yad Olam. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanetunim Batzara Uvashivya Ha'omidim Mebein Bayam Ubein Bayabasha Hamakom Yirachem Aleihem V'yotzieim Mitzara Lirvacha Umeafela Laora Umishibud Lugeula Hashta Ba'agala Uvizman Kariv V'nomar Amen. Oh, and even though I had recorded that opening, I was trying to disguise my voice. I haven't played around with those features here in the effect tab of the program that I used to record. I'm not too thrilled with it. It was a pitch change, except that's appropriate for baseball too. And it sort of gave a different voice, and it really didn't sound very clear. But I hope you got the idea. And it goes along with the groan for that pun. In the beginning, in the big inning. Get it? Okay, let's settle in. We've had a two-week gap between shows. I thought I might do a show on Chol HaMoed, just didn't work out. And we've had a very busy holiday schedule. I don't mean just on the show, but all of us have had in various forms, and we are almost sort of getting back to normal after Simchat Torah here in Israel this past Monday, outside of Israel Monday and Tuesday, or Tuesday to be more specific. Sukkot started coming down here in Israel. Those who took their sukkah down right after Yom Tov got it in before the rain. We had very nice rain on Tuesday and a little bit yesterday, I think a little bit this morning. And Baruch Hashem, the beginning of the rainy season has a promise for good rain. We'll see what happens. On the sad note, we've had a spate of terror attacks, stabbings, and shootings. Today, as far as what I've heard so far, there was a stabbing at the light rail station in Ramat Eshkol, the Givat HaTachmoshet station, and in Tel Aviv near Azrieli. And this added to that which happened in the last week or so. Very distressing. We're getting fast to the point of not having the confidence which we should in our government and security forces. Something has to be done, and better be done very soon, because we can't count on anyone but God and ourselves. Okay. Now, I'm sure I said this before, but it's an important idea in my eyes. About these first two verses, I read a five-verse portion from the beginning. It is actually the first parsha, the first section of Bereshit, but I favor the opinion that takes the first two verses and separates them very significantly from verses 3, 4, and 5. Now, verse 3, 4, and 5 is the brief description of day one of creation. The Torah makes a point of calling it Yom Echad, day one, or one day, rather than the first day, because the first implies a second. And when there was only one, there was no second. So unlike the rest of the days of creation, which are called Sheni and Shlishi, Revi'i, Chamishi, and Hashishi, the first day is called Yom Echad. The verses 3, 4, and 5 are God's divine command that there should be light and that it should be distinct and separated from darkness, and the light is designated as daytime and the dark is designated as night. The first two verses, again, there are different opinions. I'm not presenting a balanced view of this. I am presenting it the way that it appeals to me, because it is a significant opinion among our sources, so I don't have to feel as if I'm doing something on my own. And that is that the first two verses describe a situation before the 6 days of creation. In other words, Bereshit, in the beginning, does not mean day one, or one day, or first day. Bereshit, in the beginning, means before. And that describes, in very, very brief form, the creation of everything. And when I say everything, I say all matter and energy and time and concepts and thoughts and everything that God created ex nihilo, yesh me'ayin, something from nothing. And it was in a chaotic mix. Tohu vavohu has different ways of interpreting it. But if you follow this line, it's Bereshit, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, meaning everything. And the earth was in a chaotic mix, with darkness over the void, and the Shechina, the Ruach Hashem, Ruach Elokim, whatever that means, was hovering over the waters. From that chaotic mix came creation or formation of something from something. In other words, in using a weak analogy, if you have an arts and crafts project to do, your first step, because you have nothing, is to go to the hobby shop and buy a couple of tools, raw materials, glue, nails, whatever you need for your project, and bring them home in a shopping bag. Then you sit down, and now it's not you have nothing, you have what you need. You have your pliers and your screwdriver and your nails and your drill and your glue and the wood and the all the other materials you want, the paints, etc., etc. They are in the shopping bag in a somewhat chaotic mixture. And then, step by step, you reach into that bag and you separate different items in the order in which you are going to make your project. And that is a creative process of something from something. The something previous was the raw material. The something now that you formed or created is a part of what you're doing, with sides and a backing and a bottom and paint and different colors and whatever else you want to adorn it with. And then you go on to the next phase. I see creation in that format, that God, where there was nothing in existence except him, and it really doesn't pay to think about that or to ponder that, because there's no way that we could understand that, because when we say nothing, we still feel like there's something around, but nothing here. And here we're talking about total nothing, except for God. And then he brought everything into existence. People like to use the term Big Bang, because it sort of bridges a perceived gap between Torah and science. And now all of the materials were there, and then in the course of the 6 days of creation, that which was already in existence was specialized, concentrated, separated, put into action, given laws of nature to follow, etc., etc. So that's the first point. What comes from there is the famous question about what do you mean, Yom Echad? If we say one day, we think in terms of a 24-hour period, by convention, beginning at midnight and going to the following midnight, or beginning in the evening with the setting of the sun and going to sunset the following day. But it could really be any 24-hour period, but we're sort of stuck. When we say one day, we think in terms of a 24-hour period. When God says one day, there are those who suggest that God in the Torah talks in human terms. Dibra Torah bilashon b'nei Adam, the Torah speaks the way people do. And that's got a very practical value in that we could understand what it says. Even if we have to make the jump to say it wasn't exactly the way it was or wasn't actually the way it was, but we can only understand it in this way. In any event, Yom Echad and Yom Sheni and Yom Shlishi can very well be the length of time that we are familiar with when we say a day and a week. Or we could say, no people around, sun and the moon and the stars haven't even been placed in the heavens. Method or let's say duration of creation, laws of nature have not kicked in yet to operate. Things were being done at a much faster pace. And it's very possible that Yom Echad describes 1,000 years, 1,000,000 years, 1,000,000,000 years, or an unspecified eon of time. Either way, the question then is, what about this first two verse part, Bereshit Bara Elokim? How long did that take? And for this, my answer is, we have no way to answer it. In fact, we fault the question, because time, as we know it, has not yet been defined and separated from the chaotic mixture. And therefore, we're talking a quote, timing that we can't understand or imagine. It just doesn't work the same way. But that's an important point. Because if the creation of the world, of something from nothing, was a complex set of stages, previous worlds created and destroyed, and loads of time or fractions of a second, doesn't matter. Again, it's not a quantifiable issue because we don't have or didn't have any method of measurement of these kind of things. Then when you ask the question, how do we reconcile the year 5776 that the world was created 5,776 years ago with the fact that science declares an age of the universe of 15 billion years or so, give or take a month or two, facetiously said. By the way, facetious is one of the two words in the English language that have a unique feature. And that is, they have the vowels, A, E, I, O, and U, in order. And if you do facetiously, then the Y gets in there also in alphabetical order. I don't remember the other word, but the facetiously was the one that stuck in my mind. Anyway, when that question comes up, or did dinosaurs really exist, or when did they exist, it all could be, I'm not saying that it is, it all could be in the indeterminable, I was going to say period of time, but I don't know what to say instead, in that indeterminable era of Bereshit Bara Elokim and Vaharetz Hayata Tohu Vavohu, and then the evidence of dinosaurs was in the building materials that the world that we know was fashioned. So it's not the whole answer, but it actually can satisfy most of those kind of questions. You could add to that that the 6 days of creation are also not normal and natural, that the period of time from after the first Shabbat of creation until the flood might have had different laws of nature operable, that the period of the flood was again supernatural or not natural or in the absence of nature. And then only after Noah and all who were with him come out of the Teva to populate the world as we know it, that's really where timing can possibly begin. All the timing of things before then are totally skewed based on the unnatural or supernatural circumstances in at the time. I just noticed that I'm having trouble with modulating the volume. Some reason the program is not behaving the way it usually does. And when I was at 100% of input level, I was coming across as shouting. And when I dropped it to where I usually kept it at 50% or 60% or even 80%, I was barely getting it recorded and had to amplify it artificially. And now I'm at 95%, and maybe this will be reasonable. We're approaching the end of the first half of the show, but I wanted to say something also. The way the Torah describes creation, and even the fleshing out of that description by Chazal, our sages, are certainly not a journal entry description of what happened. There is unbelievable latitude for speculating exactly what this means and what's missing. The Torah, we also have to recognize, could have gone in the other direction. It could have said, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Period. And then move on to the story of Adam and Chava in Gan Eden with no detail. Or it could have taken several chapters to describe creation, but it didn't do that either. So hold that thought, and we'll be right back with more Torah Tibbetz audio for Bereshit. You are listening to Torah Tibbetz audio for Parshat Bereshit, or for Shabbat Bereshit. Bereshit is one of the Sedras that gives a name to the Shabbat. Next week is Shabbat Parshat Noach, the Shabbat on which we read the portion of Noach, and same for Lech Lecha. But Bereshit is actually called Shabbat Bereshit. And there are a few others that are named for the Sedras. Some are named for the Haftorahs. That's the way it works. Now, we were talking about creation. I want to make it clear, again, that pretty much we're talking speculation about creation. Because what does it mean that God said, let there be light, and there was light? What does that mean? We don't know. We speculate. Let me jump elsewhere for a moment in case I forget later. This Shabbat is Mevorchim HaChodesh. We bless and announce the coming Rosh Chodesh, which is Rosh Chodesh Mar Cheshvan, will be next Tuesday and Wednesday. But it's more than just another Rosh Chodesh. It's sort of like the first Rosh Chodesh of the year, since Rosh Chodesh of Tishrei was occluded by Rosh Hashanah. We barely paid it attention. We didn't announce it before. We didn't have the davening of Rosh Chodesh or the Torah reading of Rosh Chodesh because it was Rosh Hashanah, which trumps it. We had a very, very scant reference to it talking about the Musaf Korbanot, since the Musaf of Rosh Chodesh is brought as well as the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah on that day. So when we're talking about the beginning of the year, the calendar year, that's Tishrei. When we're settling in to the months, we're not waiting now for the first month of the year by the counting of months Nisan, but Mar Cheshvan has that flavor to it, even though it's officially month number 8 of the calendar year. Also be aware of the fact that Bereshit is always Mevorchim Chodesh, and it is the only Sedra of the 54 Sedras of the year with that distinction. There are many Sedras that are most often Mevorchim, and others that are less frequent, and many that are never Mevorchim, but there is only one Sedra that is always Rosh Chodesh benching, and that's Bereshit. Significant? I don't know. I could make a nice little Devar Torah for it, but it really is neither here nor there. It's just a fact of the calendar. The other thing is that Mar Cheshvan is the name of the month, not Mar Cheshvan, and not Cheshvan, but Mar Cheshvan. It's one word. It does not break up with the word Mar followed by Cheshvan, even though many people do that. That's sort of a misnomer for the month. The month's name is Mar Cheshvan. If you see otherwise on a calendar, it's because they didn't feel like having too long of a name, because using Cheshvan goes much more sympathetically with the names of the other months. Another point before we get back into Bereshit, and that is that as of Shmini Atzeret, Simchat Torah, we began saying that God is the Mashiv HaRuach Umorid HaGeshem. Till then, we either didn't say anything about that, or we said that God is the Morid HaTal, the one who causes the dew to fall. In any event, having ushered in the rainy season with the beginning of saying Mashiv HaRuach Morid HaGeshem, we do not yet ask for rain in the form of saying V'tein Talu Matar Livracha. That in Israel is done on the 7th of Mar Cheshvan, and in Chutz La'aretz at the beginning of December, the 4th or the 5th of December. And we'll talk more about that next week, because we will begin it after the next show. But it is important that we acknowledge God as the rainmaker, that we acknowledge God in a role of continuing supervision and sometimes interception and participation in the functioning of the world. There are people who are happy to admit they believe that God created the world, but they feel like he's too big to worry about the growth of a blade of grass or the fall of a drop of rain. And our Hashkafa, Judaism, considers God to be totally involved in this world, either in an overt way or a behind-the-scenes way, but definitely not absent. Sometimes quiet, but definitely not absent. And you have to keep that in mind. So it's an important prayer, and I already have my lead tidbit in my head for next week, and I hope that it will come out the way that I see it in my mind's eye. And next show, Amir Tzashem, we'll talk more about it with Parshat Noach. Getting back to the Parsha of Bereshit, you have at the beginning the description of the creation of the world. I wanted to make a couple of observations about day 4, or actually the 4th day of creation, which is Vayomer Elokim Yehi Me'orot Birkia HaShamayim. God said, let there be luminaries in the firmament of the heaven to separate between the day and the night. We're talking about the placing of the sun and the moon in their orbits, and the planets and the stars and everything else in the cosmos. An interesting observation that different commentaries handle in different ways is the description of the sun and the moon first as Shnei Hamorot HaGedolim, the two great luminaries, and immediately the Maor HaGadol, the great luminary, who will dominate, which will dominate in the daytime, and the Maor HaKatan, that will rule, so to speak, the night and the stars. So there is a reference in one verse to the sun and the moon being the great luminaries, and then to the sun being the great luminary and the moon being the tiny luminary. Now the fact of the matter is, we're dealing with two different realities in the way we look at things. In, for example, in stars, brightness of stars, there are two terms that are used. There is luminosity and magnitude. Luminosity is a measure of how bright a star actually is. And for statistical accounting, you have a hypothetical distance from Earth. That distance is called a parsec. And the stars are measured in their relative brightness to each other on an absolute basis, as if they were all at a distance of one parsec from Earth. Then you have magnitude, which takes into account that some stars are closer and some stars are further away. And magnitude is really apparent magnitude, meaning how bright does a star appear to us. And both of those are real, because we're the ones looking at the stars, so relative and apparent magnitude means something, and the absolute magnitude of the luminosity of the star has a different significance in the study of astronomy. Similarly, we can say that the sun is a very large ball of hot gas, and the moon is a fairly puny sphere of rock. And certainly calling the sun the great luminary and the moon that reflects only 11% of the light that the sun reaches it to us is the lesser luminary. On the other hand, when we look at the sun and the moon from Earth, we find that they are remarkably similar in apparent size. Recently we had dust storms which filled the air with haze, and the sun was visible at certain times of the day, and you did a double take. You looked at it and said, looks just like a full moon. The sun and the moon appear to us the same size. That's why during a solar eclipse, the disk of the moon can sometimes exactly cover the disk of the sun, and all you see is the corona, the halo around it. Occasionally, if the moon is a little bit further away, when it is in between the Earth and the sun, there'll be a little bit of ring of the body of the sun visible, different kind of eclipse. But pretty much, the sun has a diameter 400 times greater than that of the moon. 400 times greater might not really impress you, but since we're talking three-dimensional, it's 400 times 400 times 400, which is 64 million moons fit into the volume of the sun. 64 million. So the sun is 64 million times greater than the moon. And yet, it is approximately 400 times more distant to us than the moon, which is why they appear to be the same size, which is why they can also be referred to as the two great luminaries, because everything else that we see in the night sky, the planets and stars, appear to the naked eye as no more than a point of light, except for these two big disks, the disk of the moon and the disk of the sun. So, again, it could be both, and it's important that it's thought of as both, and it is very significant that the 400 factors in there, the sun being 400 times the diameter of the moon, and the sun being 400 times more distant, creating that situation, gives us the feeling that this was not a coincidence, that this is how God planned it to be, that from our human perspective, we see it a certain way, and we study it, and we know of its absolute characteristics as well. But it's good to keep both of those things in mind. Continuing with the days of creation, one of the things I always like to speculate about include on what day was the dolphin created. The fish of the sea were created on the fifth day of creation, and mammals were created on the sixth day of creation. Now the dolphin swims in the ocean like a fish does, but it breathes air, cannot breathe underwater like all fishes can, and is a mammal, nurses its young, etc. So was it created with the other mammals, or was it created with the fish? I personally lean towards created with the fish, because I think, I have to check this, but there is a halachic difference between the blood of a fish and the blood of a mammal, as far as Tuman Tahara is concerned. And, you know, a side question, which is not a practical question, is why is a dolphin not kosher? Is it not kosher because it doesn't have split hooves and chew its cud? Or is it not kosher because it doesn't have scales and fins? Fins it has, but not scales. Either way, of course, it's not kosher and really doesn't make a difference. And the same question I ask about the bat, which is a flying mammal, the only true flying mammal, which makes it very easy to classify with the birds. And maybe it was created on the fifth day. I don't have a practical application of this, but it's a fun kind of speculation. To be sure, the categories and classes and genre and families and species that humans have classified the animal world does not necessarily force us to change certain descriptions in the Torah. I mean, as much as the bat looks more like a bird than it looks like a mammal, especially when it's flying around, there are plenty of flightless birds also, and some of them might look like mammals. Moving on to the sixth day of creation, we have the animals, Behema and Chaya, and we have human beings. It's interesting to see the language in the Torah here. Vayomer Elokim nasa adam betzalmenu kidmutenu. I don't want to get into now the royal we rather than I, and how we handle the plural use of the terminology betzalmenu kidmutenu rather than singular, but the Mefarshim do, which is not what I want to get to. Vayivra Elokim et ha'adam bitzalmo, bitzelem Elokim bara oto, zachar unkeva bara otam. Male and female, Adam was created as, I don't know, the best way to say it, as some kind of being which had both male and female fused together. I don't know if that's exactly like, I think it's called a hermaphrodite or something like that, but some kind of being, because it says that Adam in the singular, and then male and female, God created them. But the them didn't take place yet until the next chapter, where God says it's not good that man should be alone, and he brought to Adam samples of all the animals of the world, and he did not find a helpmate until God created Eve, Chava, from Adam. Now, exactly how that works, were they like Siamese twins? Nobody has any idea. But conceptually, a single human being was created, let's say, with the emotions and physicality of male and female as a single being. Then they were separated into two distinct beings, male and female, and then they were commanded to be fruitful and multiply and become as one flesh, v'hayu l'basar echad. So the understanding of that could be that when a male and a female produce a child, that child is the fusion of the substance of both the male parent and the female parent, the father and the mother. And we can see it conceptually as a reuniting of the components that Adam was originally created with in one being. There is even a concept in halacha called ishto kegufo. A person's wife is like part of his own body, which originally it was, and then it wasn't, and then it was again. So the separating in order to rejoin creates the natural situation that was meant to be. Man literally was not meant to be alone, nor was woman. And when they unite in a marriage and produce a family, they are fulfilling the charge that God gave them from creation. To put it a little differently, and just to point out something, the fifth chapter of Avot begins with Ba'asara ma'amarot nivra ha'olam, with 10 divine sayings the world was brought into being. And that refers to, in the most part, the Vayomer Elokims. Vayomer Elokim, and God said, and the Lord said, and he said, and he said, and he said. 10 of them. So Rashi and other commentaries say, okay, you can't find 10 of them, you'll find 9. And Bereshit, Bara Elokim, is also one of those divine sayings, and it's based on a verse in Tanakh. But then when you go and you count them, you'll find that there were only 8 Vayomer Elokims at the beginning, plus Bereshit makes 9, and we still have to explain the concept of with 10 divine sayings the world was brought into existence. So one of the opinions is God's command to Adam and Eve to be fruitful and multiply, which was to them not as individuals but as representatives, the progenitors of the entire human race, that command to be fruitful and multiply is also considered to be one of the divine commands with which the world was created. But the question is, what was created? And the answer is, what was created is the potential for humans to continue the process of creation. And therefore, the 10 divine sayings that the world was brought into existence consist, based on what I said earlier, in a creation of something from nothing by God, a formation in 8 different stages of the elements of creation by God, and God's command to the humans as well as the animals of the earth to be fruitful and multiply completes the divine aspect of the 10 statements and sayings that the world was brought into existence with. hope you follow that, because I like it and it's a nice idea. There is obviously a lot more in Bereshit that we're not going to touch on. Just know that the entire Parsha of Bereshit spans a significant period of time. You have the chronology of each generation. You have the birth of Noach at the end of the Sedra, and that leads into Parshat Noach next week. And you have the degeneration, literally, of the world from the pristine form it had when it was created to the continuing problems that were created by human beings and human folly through the generations, including idolatry, including immorality, including everything to the point where God says he regretted having created the human being, except for Noach. Keep that in mind. With that, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameach.